The Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Good morning, radio listeners. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of The Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. Do thank you for tuning in to our show today, and also thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710kiel.com. Also thanking those who might be listening via the Kiel application on their Apple or Android devices. In addition, I want to thank those who might be listening via, once this live show goes to podcasts, on our podcast on Apple Podcasts, as well as from the Best of Times website. We do thank AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer for being the exclusive sponsor of this radio show to provide you with beneficial information each and every Saturday morning. In just a few minutes, we're going to learn how to protect ourselves from cyber crimes. Yes, there are many of those types of criminals out there trying to get our information via the internet and other sources. So stay to this show for some very beneficial information for you and your loved ones. It is Saturday, April the 27th, and we are broadcasting our show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show is not live and has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept call-in questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Want to mention, everyone, that tomorrow is a special day for the Kaligases, Tina and Gary Kaligas. My wife, of course, many of you know, is the editor-in-chief for the past 24 years of our magazine, the Best of Times magazine. And both of us have started the magazine, wow, back in 2000 and end of 2000, we started our magazine. But on April the 28th is a really special day for both of us. We are going to be celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary. Yes, 50 years. So I want to extend my love and my appreciation to my lovely wife of 50 years, Tina Kaligas. So happy anniversary, babe. Be sure to pick up the current issue of The Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. Our May-June issue of The Best of Times will be coming out on May 1st. So make sure you pick up a copy of that particular popular magazine, which will be coming out again on May 1st. We thank you for the many compliments about our magazine. We do appreciate hearing from you via your calls, emails, and posts on various websites, our websites, etc. We do appreciate hearing from you. If you're unable to find a printed copy of any of our issues, that printed issues that are at our distribution locations, you can always visit, like many, many thousands are doing so each and every month, from our website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues of our magazine. We have over 8 years of our past issues on our website that many people are looking and utilizing. In addition, you can view and download the 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Director, which is on our website and is a popular download from our website. In addition, as I mentioned previously, once we broadcast our live show, we put a podcast on our website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com, and you can listen to the previously broadcast radio show at any time, the convenience from your home, your car, etc., by logging on to this website. Or in addition, you can log on to our app as well on Apple Podcast. The 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Director is, of course, available. Very few copies or printed copies are still available. We printed 25,000 copies and placed them at over 400 locations. There are some printed copies limited at the Cattle Council on Aging and Bossier Council on Aging. So go by and visit them. If you can't find a copy, you could always view it and download it from our website. In addition, you can download it from our app on Maxters as well. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a TBT newsletter via e-blast. Over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers in Caddo and Bossier parishes of Louisiana. It provides them with a link to read our current issue online. Also, they can also get a link to read our Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory. In addition, we include additional educational articles that are not found in our printed issue or online issue of our magazine. In addition, we include discounts and coupons and contacts and lots of additional news and items about entertainment and places to go and things that you can do within the area that are not included in our magazine. So it is a lanyard. It is a lot of extra information. So join the many, many thousands who are already receiving this newsletter via by giving us your email address. Just visit our website at thebestoftimesnews.com to subscribe free of charge to our TBT's newsletter. The only thing you have to give us is your email address, and it will prompt you to give the email address, and after that, you'll start receiving it each and every month going directly to your this particular email address. Great news, join our friends at Ernest Arlene's. They have brought back the Best of Times special dinner each and every Thursday from 4:30 p.m. to closing with fabulous meals at a highly discounted price. Remember, it is highly recommended due to the high popularity of this Thursday night Best of Times special to make advance reservations by calling 318-226-1325. Again, that's 226-1325 to make advance reservations on the Thursday night special for the Best of Times at Ernest Arlene's. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Tending Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Tending Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas. I do thank you for taking time to listen to our radio show today. Joining me on my radio show today as a special guest is Mr. Nick Merrill, who is a research fellow with the University of California Berkeley Center for Long-Term Cybersecurity. I've asked Nick to come on our show today to discuss cybersecurity and ways in which individuals and businesses can protect themselves from cybersecurity crimes. So thank you, Nick, for joining us today here in the Best of Times Radio Hour.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, Nick, let's tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Nick Merrill. I'm a research scientist at UC Berkeley. I spend most of my time thinking about the internet security. One of my core kind of research areas is how big corporations really kind of run the internet and whether that's a problem, whether that's something we should worry about or not. From a domestic competition perspective, and also internationally, from a security and kind of a war perspective. But also, we're a publicly funded university, and we consider it our mission to also do what we consider public interest cybersecurity, which includes outreach and education. And I'm really here more in the latter capacity today.
Well, that's great. But again, today I appreciate you having on my show. As I met Nick through acquaintances of relatives of ours. Was it Christmas or New Year? When was it? It was a few months ago.
It was Christmas.
Christmas time.
I'm relieved that you don't remember because I broke a glass at your house, I'm pretty sure.
That's right. That happens. that happens. But I was very impressed with you and your technique. And I said, I need to have him on my show today to help our listeners out there, either individuals or businesses, to protect themselves. So, again, thank you for acknowledging and doing that for me. So what are the biggest cyber crimes that you are seeing happening throughout the world today and right now in our neck of the woods?
Sure. So the biggest cyber crimes are, really in order, ransomware, just in the amount of disruption it causes. And then there's business email compromise, basically someone gets into your email, your business, and they can pretend to be you or pretend to be, someone who has the authority to ask for something. They use that as a way to get money or get whatever else they're interested in. And then, there's also kind of these voice cloning schemes going around. And I think it's worth talking about each one of these.
But
little known fact is that business email compromise really, actually these days, it makes more money than ransomware because people aren't paying ransoms as much. And although ransomware makes the news because it's so disruptive, business email compromise is really the one that's been the big money maker for criminals, at least in 2024.
Okay, but first of all, explain to individuals what ransomware is. And isn't there a situation where it could happen to an individual's computer if can say, because they've given some access to your computer, that they'll ask you ransomware to relieve it? Is that a form of ransomware as well?
Yeah, so first, ransomware is, a kind of attack where basically someone takes your data or your computer ransom. They do this typically by encrypting what's on the disk, making it so that you can't access it until you pay them, typically in cryptocurrency, some amount of money. So, could this happen to your personal computer? Probably not. This is really something that happens to businesses, someone who really has, capacity to pay not just a small ransom, but a big ransom. This is really organized, and the people who do this are very professional. It's really, ransomware crews are businesses, and they operate like small businesses. They're not really interested in individuals. Now, of course, it's conceivable if you have a work computer that your computer would be infected with ransomware as part of a broader attack on your workplace. It's also conceivable in some cases that perhaps, your machine could be infected, but, it's not something I've really ever heard about happening.
Well, Nick, tell our listeners, is it the situation where, let's say you're part of a small business, big business, and you might have clicked onto some site and email, and that have been they get access to your system, and then they start figuring out, well, he's with a big company, we're going to try to, get into ransomware. Isn't that how they get in the back door of particular companies? I'm sure that pipeline company.
Yeah, that certainly happens. That's right. So, the way that ransomware typically happens is that you click a link in an email that you shouldn't click. And, I would say in general, it's tempting, but, you get an email with a link in it, you really have to think twice about whether you're going to click on that link. Personally, when I get an email, especially for something important where I need to, do something that involves my work, something involves, UC Berkeley or I get an email from benefits or something like that, I open a browser window and type in, berkeley.edu and find it that way rather than clicking a link in the email because it's just too easy to make a mistake.
And that'll
be by far the most common way that ransomware operators get access.
Well, let me ask you another quick solving question. Gary's going to ask him practical ones here. So if you click, like I know a lot of my seniors and boomers out there do that. They'll click on a site, they'll click on a and then get worried. All of a sudden it comes up with weird stuff it comes up with gobbledygook. And is the quick remedy to turn off your computer or just get, shut it down as quickly as possible?
I don't know that that really does anything. I think that, definitely don't download and install any files onto your computer. That's always a bad idea. and I also think in general, this advice, we tend to place a lot of the onus on individual users. And really, I don't know how much we can expect individual users to do. I think that, while personally I try not to, click links in emails that seem important, while I personally don't, download attachments onto my computer, I prefer to open them in Google Docs or something like that in the cloud. I think that this is really up to businesses to manage this stuff. And there are things that, if you run a business, that you can do to scan email for links, to remove links before they get to your users. And if you work for a business, it's within your right to ask them to do these things. I don't think that it should be every person's job to,
to be a
cybersecurity expert.
All right. So ransomware is still out there. There are many companies that that offer ransomware protection, ransomware this and ransomware that. I mean, there's hundreds of them. I hear from various businesses that they subscribe to this, they subscribe to that. So is that a critical item that a small business or a big business should get, some of those protection devices?
Yeah. So there are two categories of protection you're likely to run into. The first is cyber insurance. So this is insurance that, you know, if you suffer cyber attack, it will cover the losses the same way that, you know, your homeowner's policy would cover the losses from some kind of damage to your home. So cyber insurance policies, you know, I personally think cyber insurance could in some cases be a good idea, but the cyber insurance market is still really young. And, you know, recently, and I think that this is a very positive development, but cyber insurance policies no longer cover ransomware payments. Cyber insurance will not pay your ransom. And that's a very important message for everyone to understand. Cyber insurance will not pay your ransom. The reason why we were getting so many ransomware attacks is because cyber insurance used to pay those ransoms. Oh. And that sent a message to criminals, well, I can ransomware anyone I want. I'll have a guaranteed payout because I know the insurer is going to pay. And in many cases, again, I'll remind these listeners, the ransomware operators are based in Russia, they're based in North Korea. You know, these are enemies of the United States. You are breaking sanctions when you pay ransomware ransoms. You should absolutely, under no circumstances, pay a ransom to a ransomware operator. It should never happen. So, you know, from insurance perspective, it is possible that they'll cover some loss, but they won't actually pay the ransom for you. So that brings you to the other kind of product that's on the market, which is some service that claims to help protect you against ransomware attacks. I think these are 100% snake oil. There's only one thing that anyone needs to do, and it costs absolutely nothing to protect against ransomware. All you need to do is make sure that if all of your computer systems go down, you can restore from a backup. I call it the wood chipper test. If you toss all of your computers into a wood chipper, assuming you had the budget from your insurance to buy new computers, would you be able to restore your business? And typically, all that means is that you have a hard drive somewhere, set of hard drives somewhere, with all the really important files that you need to back up your business. And, you know, that hard drive is not connected to a computer that's connected to the internet most of the time. Maybe every Wednesday or every once a month, you create a backup onto that hard drive. And as long as you can restore, you know, or if the stuff is in the cloud, you really don't need to worry about it. Ideally, all of your stuff, you know, is in the cloud and you don't have automatic sync set up or whatever. If you do, you have a backup again on a hard drive somewhere. As long as you can restore, you don't need to pay anyone anything. And if you are paying someone, it better be to help you restore your data, and it better be to help you back up your data. And if you're paying for anything else, like viruses, virus protection, don't bother. The virus protection is really difficult, you know, to do unless you really have a professional managing it full time, and most people who pay for these services don't.
Wow. So, but talk about a little bit about the email. You're saying that's becoming the most profitable. I hate to say this, Gary, I'm not even aware of that one. So how does that one work?
Yeah. So this one, you know, works kind of the way you would expect. You get into someone's email account and you start sending email as if you were them. And there are a lot of ways to get into someone's email account. Most of them really are pretty simple. So you get them to click a link in an email. You get them to enter their username and their password, thinking that they're logging into their email provider, and actually it's something that the attacker set up. So again, you know, just be very, very careful when you enter, you know, your password. And again, we'll probably talk about this later, but if you decide to use something like a password manager, that'll really help you out in stop not falling for those sorts of things. But, you know, in general also, if you get an email and the account isn't familiar, hopefully your email client like Gmail will tell you, hey, you don't usually get email from this person's email address. This is a new email address. But if you see someone you know email you from an email address you don't recognize, you know, give them a call. Shoot them a text. Don't just respond and say what they – and that really is, you know, going to help in most business email compromise cases. But, you know, once you get into someone's email system, and especially in these cases where they actually hack in, which is something that is no one's fault, it's, you know, really Microsoft's fault, mostly, that you can hack into these Outlook email servers, once they get into the email server, there's very little for us to do except, you know, get hire some kind of cybersecurity expert to evict the attacker, which is a whole operation and, you know, costs a lot. But I would say, you know, for most everyday people, you get an email from someone, you don't recognize the email address yet. But don't immediately do what they say.
Wow. So, again, that's becoming more and more rampant in the world, the getting into the email system?
It's certainly becoming more and more lucrative as the cybercrime market changes. And, again, the reason for this is a lot of positive developments, things I support. Ransomware is less lucrative because insurers aren't picking up the bill, because there's more of an awareness among businesses that, you know, paying the ransom just makes there be more ransomware in the world. So as a proportion, business email compromise is going up, and as a result, you know, attackers who are really professional are moving into business email compromise. And then the other reason it's really fueled by AI, you know, AI tools are helping, again, you know, you imagine there's this North Korean, you know, like government-sponsored hacker group. They need these AI tools to help them sound like native English speakers, and they've been very, very helpful to, you know, produce very convincing-looking emails. Whereas, you know, in the past, you kind of get these emails that look, you know, they don't look like someone you work with. They look like someone who doesn't speak English very well. And, you know, I think AI tools have really helped make those emails sound a lot more convincing. And even if you get some example emails, you know, from someone, you can train the AI on it, and then that AI will generate very convincing emails that really are written, you know, in their voice, maybe even know things you've talked about in the past, depending on the extent of the compromise. That can be, you know, that can be a big problem.
So again, emphasize to our listeners out there that email is got to be very careful on how you respond to emails, right? And then hopefully some of us have, I don't know how my Gmail figures out what junk or what spam, but it sends, you know, thousands and thousands of them, because I must get a lot. I'm pretty popular, been around that email for many years, Nick, so I get thousands of them, but I luckily don't click on any. A lot of them say click this to get a special offer, click this to win a prize, click this to see if you won something, and I mainly delete all of them. I don't even look at them, even though I might be winning $1 million. I don't think it's true. It's too good to be true there. But they need to be very cautious about that and sharing, you know, and sharing, of course, you share your email, but don't share the access to the system to get to your Gmail account or get to your Outlook account or get to your Yahoo account, et cetera. You know, that has to be pretty protected in a way. So hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio while we're here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Tenant Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kaligas. I do thank you for listening to our radio show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Mr. Nick Merrill, who is a research fellow with the University of California's Berkeley Center for Long-Term Cybersecurity. I've asked him to come on our show to give us some ways in which we as individuals and businesses can protect ourselves from cybersecurity crime. So thank you again, Nick, for taking time to be part of my radio show today.
My pleasure.
So you mentioned about ransomware. We mentioned a bit about the email scamming. And the next crime that you mentioned is regarding, was it personal calls coming in and scamming?
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Yes, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so what's happening more and more these days is that you'll get a scam call from someone saying that they have someone you love hostage. So often what will happen is they'll put that person on the phone, you'll hear their voice, you know, they're screaming, help me, help me, help me. And this is an extremely upsetting call that no one would ever want to get. You would never wish for anyone to get a call like this. And, you know, very often it's successful in getting people to pay. And typically, you know, this could even be, you know, whereas other kinds of cyber crimes are usually happen, you know, far away and require cryptocurrency and all these other things, you know, this is really could be someone who's just around the corner from you in your community and, you know, drives by and picks up some cash. So, you know, this is an effective sort of scam. And what's happening here typically is that they find a recording of your loved one, either from social media, from the radio. Someone could make a call from me right now using, you know, our interview, Gary.
Oh, no.
And I'm sure plenty of recordings from you. And these days, really, they only need about 15 seconds of audio to produce a very convincing voice clone with AI.
Wow.
So there's a really easy defense against this that costs $0. And the defense is that with your loved ones, you come up with a secret code word. So just some phrase, number, word, inside joke, something you could really scream in a crisis. So a word or two words are best. Don't tell anyone this word or what it is, but if you ever find yourself in that situation, you're getting put on the phone, instead of screaming, help me, you agree you're going to scream that word. And then if it ever happens that you get a call from a loved one and they're screaming something other than that word, you know that this is a voice clone and, you know, hang up the phone, call the police maybe if they can help. Sometimes they're able to trace these calls, and call your loved one and verify. But, you know, just make this kind of pact with your loved ones. Come up with the word. Don't tell anyone else what it is. And, you know, really, this is pretty much the way to stop, you know, being fooled by this kind of attack.
Hasn't this particular scam been targeted older people like me, senior citizens and grandparents and great-grandparents?
Absolutely. This has been disproportionately affecting older people. And in general, financial fraud disproportionately affects older people for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, what are some of the reasons that you know of?
Well, the number one reason, believe it or not, you know, and this isn't what most people think the number one reason is, the number one reason is that older people have more money. You know, older people are typically living on investments or some mix of investments and pension. And for that reason, they know they have cash in hand, savings that they're used to drawing down. They have, you know, much more savings than the average working American who, you know, the median American lives paycheck to paycheck. How much are you really going to be able to shake them down for, right?
Right.
And if you're just trying to scam someone you found randomly, okay, there you have a much better chance of that person having cash if you think that they're retired. They must have cash if they're retired, because how else would they be able to retire? So, you know, that really is the primary reason. And a lot of people think that it's because of older people aren't good with technology, older people are slowing down cognitively. You know, it's not really that. And none of these scams really require you to know or not know technology. You get a call from a loved one screaming, help me.
Yeah.
I think pretty much everyone would do what is in their capacity to pay in that situation. The reason older people are targeted in these schemes is because they have the financial means to pay, you know, what scammers want you to pay.
Yeah, and the other thing is occasionally we get weird emails like in emails. I've got a few in the past that though they came to spam, you know, some of the starting says, you know, you're about to be shut down by the IRS. Your Social Security is going to be defaulted unless you contact us as immediately as sooner, and all that kind of things. It scares the senior to do it, to take action. I mean, I've heard and seen that happen myself, that they typically get so riled up and stressed out that they're going to take action as quickly as possible. They don't want to get in trouble.
And look, it's good to take action, but this is just like the conversation with clicking links in emails. If you get an email like this, it's good to take action. Go Google the phone number for the IRS and call the IRS from the phone number you find on Google.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a case number in the email address, tell them the case number that way. Don't call the number in the email. Don't click the link in the email. Find it some other way. And I would, I've gotten an email that was a scam that was convincing enough for me to follow up on. But instead of calling the link in the email, I went to, you know, the state website and whatever, and it was fine in the end. But it was a pretty good scam. They were targeting people who had LLCs in California, and it looked like it came from the California Franchise Tax Board. But I logged into my California Franchise Tax Board account, and I saw that it was fine. And that's the way to take action. You know, don't instinctively do what's in the email. Find the authority, find the body, contact them directly outside of the email channel.
Okay, well, let's shift on to something else, because I know a lot of my listeners have had this. I've received numerous notices. there have been probably an increase of data breaches throughout the world and throughout our country, that you get this notice and says your email, all your information is now on the dark web. So explain to our listeners what a data breach is and what happens. Generally, these bad guys who get in the data system of Equifax or whoever, Target, and put it on some web and sell it, right?
That's right. So, I mean, data breach is a very broad term. It can really refer to any number of things, but the basic theme is that some information that's supposed to be private gets into the wrong hands. And this can happen in a variety of ways. Sometimes it's because, you know, people are lax with their security. Sometimes it's because the attackers are highly, highly motivated. Typically, it's the former more than the latter, but, you know, so it goes. In any case, you gave your data to someone. They were supposed to keep it safe. They didn't. And now it ended up in the wrong hands. So, look, everyone's data is on the dark web. There's actually some stat about this, and I don't want to give your listeners misinformation, but some surprisingly almost everyone in America has their data on the dark web somewhere. And really, you know, if you're above the age of, you know, 18, your social security number is on the dark web. So
Wow. The
question is really, what are you going to do about it? So, again, I think the thing that's going to help most of your listeners, get a credit freeze. You can go to the big credit agencies. There are only three of them, Equifax, TransUnion, I forget the other one, and you can ask them to freeze your credit. And all this really does is apply a password to changes to your credit score. So if you ever need to open up a new bank account, if you ever need to take out a mortgage, if you ever need to open up a new credit line, all you need to do is kind of give this password, unfreeze your credit for 24 hours, open up your credit card, and then go on with your life. My credit is frozen. It costs maybe nothing to $10 to do for each credit union. And, you know, most of the time you're not opening up new bank accounts. And especially for seniors, you know, seniors really don't take out lines of credit that much. Maybe they take out a reverse mortgage, but it's a really big deal and they're not doing it like every day. So, you know, freezing your credit is a really, really, you know, low-cost, easy way to protect against, you know, your Social Security number kind of floating around out there. And there's really no reason why, with your credit line frozen, you should be succumbing to, you know, these really bad kind of identity attacks like you hear about. Now, the other side of all of this, of course, is that telco companies, so, you know, your cell phone service provider, have really needed to up their game recently when it comes to SIM cards. So another really common thing that happens these days is that data that people are able to buy on the dark web, they're able to then leverage and steal your phone number by doing what's called a SIM swapping attack.
Wow.
And with that SIM swapping attack, they're able to do all sorts of other horrible things, which, you know, aren't really worth talking about. But the main thing that, you know, you can do to protect yourself against this is, like, stay with a larger provider if you're able to. Okay, don't use a smaller cell phone provider. And if you can, make sure that you can log into your provider on their website, and often they'll let you set, like, a PIN or a password associated with your phone number. Do that if you can. Really help. And then the final thing here, and this is just my advice for everyone, and really the main thing anyone can do to protect themselves, get a password manager. So a password manager is basically a tool that will save all of your passwords for you. And it will help you out in two ways. First, it makes sure that your passwords are different from each other. Second, it prevents you from forgetting your password. I can't remember my passwords. I don't need to remember my passwords anymore. I haven't needed to remember a password now in over 5 years because I've been using password manager. And I tell you, it's absolutely blissful. Never need to worry about remembering a password, and you don't need to either if you use a password manager. This helps you keep, you know, your password out of attacker's hands because you're more likely to use a secure password if you don't need to remember it. You just outsource all of that work to the password manager. You don't need to remember your password anymore. And the final wonderful thing about password managers is that they will autofill the password for you on the right site, which means that if you are on the wrong site, if you click a phishing link in an email or something like that, it won't let you fill in that password, at least not without you jumping through some hoops, at which point you might start to ask yourself some questions. So I use 1Password. 1Password is a really great tool. You know, it's free. You can optionally pay if you want to share passwords with loved ones, which I do. We have a family 1Password vault. 1Password doesn't pay me a dime. I would be allowed to accept it even if they did because of my position at the university. It's just a good tool. And there's also LastPass out there, which is their main competitor, also fine. You know, I'd say whatever password manager you want to use is probably fine. Anything is better than trying to remember passwords yourself.
So how do individuals know that their item that was their information that was breached and put on the dark web and they utilize it? How do they end up finding that they're a victim of identity theft, or they filed a loan form, they did this, they did that? Do you generally get notified of all that, or it happens months or years later?
The worst case happens months or years later when you try to open a credit line or get a mortgage and you say, I'm sorry, we can't issue this mortgage, your credit is like nearly zero. You know, I think that's really the worst case. These days, there are some better, you know, banks have implemented a lot, they've gotten a lot better at notifying you when credit score changes a lot. So, you know, if you are diligently paying off your credit card every single month, or, you know, even if you have kind of, you know, revolving credit line, you know, you run some balance on it, but it's just a certain amount, and then suddenly that balance goes up by 400%. You know, the banks have become a lot more proactive at reaching out to you, and partially that's because they know this is their problem too. Obviously, identity theft is a really big pain for users, for people who, you know, for consumers. But if people don't trust credit, people aren't going to use credit. They're going to go back to cash. They're going to use check or use Venmo. You know, a lot of these credit companies and are under tremendous pressure from all of these alternative forms of payment. They know it. And for that reason, you know, for better or worse, that has incented them to step up their game and help protect people against some of these macabre threats.
Well, the other thing is, I'm telling my listeners, several years ago, we did a bunch of shows about of course, COVID, but the impact of bad people during COVID doing certain things. And I told my listeners about, you know, I'll share with you quickly here, the story is that my data, my information must have been in some data breach because, and many other people throughout the world, throughout the United States, not the world, must have been breached with this. And there were some really smart people out there that when I got a notice in the mail in January or February of a particular year, I think it's 2001, saying that I filed for unemployment compensation during COVID and I received umpteen thousands of dollars. And then I called and I said, I've never filed for unemployment. And this is not, they put my name, address, social security number, everything was correct except my legal name. And so I called them and said, well, somebody must have hacked your information. And yes, we've been paying you monthly a particular check. And I told the person on the phone, I said, where is it going to? Oh, some bank account. We don't have the details on it. And I said, I've never received it. So, I mean, if you can tell me, I've never received this money. So they reported it as a fraud, a scam. But then come to find out, thousands and thousands of others started getting these same notices from various states that this was a nationwide thing of falling unemployment because somebody tapped in the data and a former employer, so your employer, like they filed on my employee back in 1990.
That's amazing.
And it showed up the person, the company and everything on there. And they filed, and I mean, they were talking 10, 15 years ago, they're filing.
I mean, they got nothing better to do. You know, there was a rash of attacks during COVID where people were applying to community colleges fraudulently.
Yes.
And you think, why would you apply to a community college fraudulently? But the reason is, when you get into a community college, you get an email address, .edu email address at that community college. And that allows you to send spam, and then you can sell access to that email address. And it's like, look, you know, really people are bothering to, you know, apply to a community college just to sell an email address? Yeah, because you can sell those email addresses for $100, $200. That is a lot of money in some parts of the world.
That's right.
And if you aren't really trying to, you know, prevent whatever, trying to geofence people into your area, if you're community college, you're going to get attacked like that.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now, with more sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible, you're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 KEEL, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country House Report, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country Edge Report, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kalikas, and I do thank you for taking time to listen to our show today. Joining me on my show as a special guest is Mr. Nick Merrill, who is a research fellow with the University of California's Berkeley Center for Long-Term Cybersecurity. And I've asked Nick to join our show today to talk a little bit about cybersecurity and ways in which we as individuals can protect ourselves from cybersecurity crime. So thank you again for taking time to be part of our show today.
My pleasure.
So we've given our listeners some helpful hints, but let's do some summarizing. We only got a few more minutes in this last segment. So what do people generally, the common mistake people make with cybersecurity?
You know, the most common mistake people make is not using a password manager.
Okay.
People try to remember their own passwords. They try to write them down. Always a disaster. And I always say, if you ever have an opportunity to not use a password, take it. So you ever see sign in with Google, sign in with Facebook, you know, sign in with Apple, do it. Okay, just do that. And use a password manager. I recommended before 1Password. LastPass is also, you know, a perfectly fine competitor. You know, use something. And I'll add also, you know, to older listeners, I dealt, you know, when my dad passed away, he used the password manager, and it was a lot easier for me to close out his affairs as a result of that. You know, it allowed that kind of, my ability to get into his accounts and then deal with, you know, all of the different kind of things you have to deal with. So, you know, using password manager, it's not just for security. It's also, you know, really a gift to your loved ones. If you ever, you know, fall ill or, you know, otherwise people need to take care of your affairs, pay your bills, you know, the one password manager can really help in these kinds of situations while also, you know, helping with your security. So that is by far and away the number one thing for the average person to do. And the other thing, you know, don't download stuff to your computer and double-click it, if you can avoid that, especially if you receive stuff in an email. To the extent that you can, you know, Google will allow you to open any kind of document in Google Docs. You can open spreadsheets. You can open Word files. Take them up on that. Let them bear that risk. You don't need to download that stuff onto your computer and run it. Let the cloud do that for you. Google doesn't charge you anything for that. They take your data, but they don't charge you anything for that. You know, take them up on the deal. It's a good one.
And tell them, Nick, what that means. That means you're not clicking when it says how you open. It's not downloading. It's actually you're going to view it, see it, whatever, on their system, on the cloud. You may be able to see it, but it's not downloaded, right? It won't do anything to your computer.
And I do that even with people I trust. You know, I just got a collaborator sent me a document today. I trust my collaborator. I'm going to open the file in Google Docs because I don't know where his computer has been. It's not a question of trust. You know, it's just there's no need to trust anyone or anything more than you have to.
Something could have been attached to it as well. But let me have quickly some stupid questions here. I'm thinking my listeners are having, you know, they're gonna say, God, I get that all the time. So generally, when you open something on Gmail, I'm not real familiar with Outlook and Hotmail and all them, but it says we have scanned. I don't know if Mr. Gmail or Google does that. We have scanned this document. We have scanned this, and we find nothing in this particular document. Isn't that the case? And are they doing the same thing? They're loading it and checking it for you?
Yeah, and then you're trusting that they're checking it right, you know, and they might be. They often are. I would say they usually are. But, you know, the one characteristic of every attack we've ever seen in the wild is that it got past every virus scanner.
Wow. Okay.
Every attack we've ever seen, because otherwise if it didn't get past the virus scanner, it wouldn't have been successful. Hmm. You think all of these people who were ransomware didn't have a virus scanner? You think all of these people who were ransomware didn't have that same message, we've scanned this and we didn't find anything wrong with it? Everyone uses the same tools you're using.
Oh.
And mostly those tools work.
Yeah.
But, you know, they fail some proportion of the time, and there are billions of emails being sent to the United States every single day. And when there are billions of emails being sent, 99.99999% accuracy still means that there are going to be millions, hundreds of thousands at least, or thousands of, you know, false negatives every single year. And yours could be one of them. And you can reduce that risk. You can reduce your personal risk to zero by never downloading something from an email and running it on your personal computer.
Wow, that's a great suggestion as well. The other thing that I have got, and I know many of my listeners saying, how come some of these companies saying your password is out of date? You've been using this same password for 6 or 9 months. You need to update it. Is that legit when you get these sometimes?
Sometimes it is. You know, sometimes you'll get an email like that, and it's obviously just to try to steal your password, because they'll say something like, you know, enter your current password, enter your new password, but it's not actually the website. So again, if you get an email like this, you know, let's say it's from Facebook or something, don't click the link in the email, go to facebook.com, change your password there. Now, sometimes, though, this email will be legitimate. Let's say you do that step, you know, you don't click the link in the email, and you find it is legitimate. And often the reason for that is there will be some kind of breach. They know that the passwords have been compromised, and they need you to change your password because they know there's some chance your password has been compromised, so they need you to take some action.
That's what I think. I had a few of those. Yes, go ahead.
Another thing that will sometimes happen is that, you know, they'll just revoke your password, and they'll send you a link to reset it. And then you need to click the link. Could be fine, just check that it's actually www.facebook.com. You know, check every character, but that's really not the best practice these days. But in any case, you know, these can sometimes be legitimate. Again, you know, my argument here, use a password manager. The password manager manages this for you. You should never be bothered by needing to change a password because, you know, you just change it and it's updated in your password manager automatically. Your password manager even comes up with the password for you, so you know it's secure. And also, again, you know, like I said earlier, if you ever have the chance to not use a password, take it. Sign in with Apple, sign in with Google. You know, ideally, you're not having passwords at every site you use, and typically websites will allow you to log in with some other provider, and you should absolutely take them up on that.
Well, Nick, what about those? I have certain accounts, and I'm sure many people have the same accounts that you might log in, use your login, use your password, but then it says, I need to have double verification. You've signed up for two-part verification. I'm going to send you either an email or a text, and you need to upload in the code. So isn't that really a good system as well? I've done a lot of my accounts that do that. I mean, it's more time consuming that you're going to have to wait to, you know, go to your phone and see the text and remember the number and post it on there. Isn't that a good safeguard for cybersecurity crimes? Avoid those?
Absolutely. Two-factor is great. You know, I use it whenever I can. With two-factor, I would say if they give you the option, use it. In my order of preference, that, you know, ideally the two-factor happens through an app. So Google Authenticator is an example. You might also have Duo. You know, there are various others, but the app-based two-factors are really great. Email is also really good two-factor, assuming you also have two-factor on your email, but really email is a great one. And then if you have no other option, I think using text two-factor is better than nothing. But again, you know, these days there are a lot of these SIM swapping attacks. Well, they'll be able to steal your number and intercept text messages that are bound for you. So for that reason, you know, I don't love SMS-based two-factor, text-based two-factor, and a lot of people are moving away from text-based two-factor. But if the option is between text-based two-factor and nothing, use it. Turn it on.
So again, the text two-factor is not as good as the number. The number you're sending, they're sending you a number. I never had any text. They always send me numbers. So that's not as valid, not as secure.
Yeah, so if they're sending you a number code to log in, you know, typically what happens, right? You enter your password and it says, okay, we sent a code to your text message. Enter the code. Or we sent a code to your email.
Right.
So sending code to email is better than sending that code to text message.
Okay.
You know, people can steal your phone number these days through SIM swapping attacks. So really better to get that code through an email or through an app if they provide you with that option.
Great advice. Wow. Didn't know that. So I would thought it would, the email was more readily accessible or sneakily. But again, you're right. The phone could have that. But luckily, they say this is going to expire in 5 minutes. So if somebody wants to hack into it, they have to hurry up and use that particular number, right?
Yeah, you know, typically what will happen there is that if they've gotten your SIM card, they've gotten your phone number, they'll go ahead and trigger your two-factor knowing that they already have compromised your password. So the order is, you know, they'll get your password. They know that it's to a bank account. They see that bank account likely has some amount of money in it or it's something that they want or cryptocurrency, whatever it is that they're after. And after they've made that determination, then they'll go through the trouble of getting your SIM card swapped to their account. So it's the opposite order of operations. You know, it's good that the account expires, but it doesn't do you any good because from the attacker's perspective, they already have your password. They already have your phone number. It's really no disincentive for them.
Okay, we got just about a minute or two left, but I want you to mention, because I know a lot of people are doing Facebook and using, going to the airports and using, or going to restaurants and using public Wi-Fi. Is there a risk when you start using this public Wi-Fis when you're on your phone or your laptop?
There's a risk to your privacy. There's not a risk to your security. Your passwords that you enter on websites and on apps are encrypted all the way to your app. No one in between, what we like to say in security, on the wire is going to be able to intercept that password. Doesn't matter if that password is over a public network or not. The only exception is that, you know, if you join a public network and your device says this network is insecure, then don't use that network.
Okay.
That is where you don't want to use that network. There are some kinds of, you know, this is really inside baseball, but there are some encryption standards that have been deprecated because they're known to be insecure. Some people haven't upgraded, and that can create a situation. But your device will warn you. If you're just at the airport, you know, you're good. Okay, I log into, you know, San Francisco airport, you know, Wi-Fi all the time. Personally, I use a VPN, but that's to protect my privacy, not to protect my security.
Okay. Well, again, thank you, Nick. You've given us a lot of great information. I've got 1,000 more questions I could probably ask you, but we're running out of time here. But again, thank you for taking time. You've educated me, and I know you've educated my many thousands and thousands of radio listeners out there. And again, best wishes to you, and thank you again for being part of our show.
Hey, thanks so much, Gary. It was a pleasure to join you.
Well, good luck. Hope to see you soon in the near future. Hopefully not before Christmas time, but hope you'll be coming into the Shreveport and Bossier City area. So take care. Have a good one.
Sure thing. Take care, Gary.
You too. Remember to tell your friends to join our radio show every Saturday morning for the news that they can use and more information that they might need. Don't forget to pick up your personal copy of The Best of Times in one of our 270 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our show today. Again, I want to wish my wife, Tina Kaligas, a happy 50th wedding anniversary. I'm Gary Kaligas, wishing you and yours the best of times both today and every day. Have a great day.